Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political center, and I have with me on the political left, Senator Jim DeBacchus.
Hi, Natalie. How are things on the center?
The center is great. It's where real problem solving happens, but sometimes I listen to my friend on the right, Representative Dan McKay.
Good morning, Natalie. How are things over in the center?
that's my best impression of Jim.
He's mocking me.
I want to start talking about, it's really the Mike Kennedy, Mitt Romney race, but it all goes back to this evangelical Baptist pastor, Robert Jeffress. Jeffries? His name?
I think it's Jeffress.
Jeffress. Just a case in point. One time I did a visit to Washington, D.C. I was working at the Salt Lake Chamber at the time. It was on immigration reform, and the evangelicals were right with the posture that I was representing. And I walked along Capitol Hill with a leader in the evangelical community, and it was as if I was walking with a very powerful person.
Really?
The lobbying, the stature that he had really impressed me. And I can't even remember his name, I hate to say. But I bring that up as an opening because for whatever reason, President Trump invited this pastor to the closing prayer at their—
The benediction. Closing prayer. At the dedication of the—
Embassy.
Or the grand opening of the embassy in Jerusalem.
In Jerusalem. And, of course, Mitt Romney is very— I think witty in what he tweets and very well researched, it seems to me, when he tweets. But he tweeted about how what a shame this was that a religious bigot had been invited to do this. And he called him— – didn't he call him a bigot in his tweet, Jim?
I believe he did.
I'll look it up, but yeah, something like
but,
that.
But in any case, it's because of comments that this pastor has made about Mormonism, Islam, Judaism. And it created quite a local scandal because Mike Kennedy enters in. And what, did he actually call this pastor?
Yeah. Yeah, he reached out to him.
Tell us, Dan.
Like, that's, I mean, you
he
know.
Called him and said, I'm sorry that—
Mitt Romney, he apologized.
Romney shouldn't have spoken on behalf of Utahns or something.
But he
something
apologized effect, yeah. for all Utahns to this clown. That's what Kennedy did.
You're even on the clown trade?
But this is so mixed up to me because I don't know why Mike Kennedy did this.
Well, okay, there's that question.
Okay.
Because
he basically—
Let's go back to the original.
—sided with someone who'd been
Why would a Senate candidate— Why would he reach out and make an issue out of somebody who's saying prayer? This is somebody who says, I want America to be more religious, Mitt Romney, right? And then at the same time, when America includes someone, anyone to say a prayer, what does he do? He castigates the person who's going to give a prayer. Now, I get it. He wants to talk about, you know, this guy's a religious bigot. But I think Mitt and others have forgotten, in my opinion, what the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints means when we say we are the only true church. Because we're not being welcoming and inviting that way either. It's not like we're, you know, it's not like we're saying, hey, everybody else is true too. We're saying we got it all figured out.
When
we have
a monopoly. When you claim the authority, you're excluding.
That's right. And so,
but they do it politely.
No, that's right. So maybe there's a nice way of doing it, a passive way of doing it. But people that have forgotten history of the Mormon Church and look back at what prophets like Joseph Fielding Smith said about, you know, evangelicals and Catholics especially and other faiths, they said basically they were going straight to hell.
Don't you be bashing Mormons on this show.
This is my tribe.
We're not going there.
All I'm
going
to say is, this is my tribe, Jim. All I'm saying is, don't go. I think it is a far fetch for someone to complain and call someone a bigot for their religious beliefs.
So you don't think any of this should have happened at all?
It shouldn't have happened at all.
So you fault Romney. Do you also fault Kennedy for entering the fray?
I thought it was clever publicity. Romney was owning the media cycle, and at the end of the day, Kennedy stepped in with, some would argue, as a misstep. But you have now, everyone that is listening to our show is asking, well, who is Mike Kennedy?
Yeah. Now
they weren't asking that before because they were like, he's that other guy running against Mitt.
Jim, what would you add? Anything?
Look, it's important for this. It goes to the core of Mitt Romney issue, which is important to all Utahns. Who, if he beats Jenny, is going to show up? Is it that liberal guy who ran for governor against Ted Kennedy in Massachusetts, whose positions are totally different? Is it the guy who ran the Olympics? Is it the guy who took on Trump at the Hinckley Institute ferociously, honestly? Is it the one who kissed up at the famous dinner and ate the frog legs. And this goes to it. Where is the Mitt Romney going to be? And you know what? I doubt Mitt Romney knows now who the Mitt Romney that's going to show up there. But this gives us another clue.
What clue does it give you?
None. I just made that up. I couldn't think of a way to get out of that.
Since we mentched Joseph Fielding Smith on the air, who is not the Joseph Smith, for those of you that don't know, but in any case.
He wrote the Doctrines of Salvation.
Let's stay with the LDS Church for just a minute, because in the past week they met with the NAACP. And it was a beautiful union to talk about collaborating on humanitarian work. And I thought just a really nice coming together moment.
Yeah.
But there was this crazy, in the era of fake news, internet prankster who put out a fake apology from the Mormon prophet apologizing for the what I'll just call the priesthood ban for black people in the Mormon church from the 70s and back. Yeah. Fake. Dan.
This was yucky. I'm not going to lie. You know, from an individual who I struggled growing up with this issue of blacks being excluded from the priesthood. I struggled with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a difficult part of my faith and growing past it. But taking, I think, what is something that is to the quick of people who are African-American or black in the church, and it cuts right to the quick of their faith, and doing this. And the thing was, they it wasn't like they just posted a ha-ha funny tweet.
Mm-hmm.
They recreated a version of the Mormon newsroom, links and everything, so that it all looked seamless and that it was actually from the church. There was no way to tell, except for when you scrolled down to the bottom, there was a disclaimer that was written in very interesting language about it being not real.
You know, it takes
painful.
A grain of truth in order to make that work.
Yes.
And I think what he was twisting is Elder Oakes.
Do we know who did it, by the way?
Yeah, the guy admitted it.
It was in the papers.
Okay.
Elder Oakes said about African Americans and about other things, the church doesn't seek apologies and we don't give them. You know, so there was this black issue, and now we've moved on, and we're celebrating that. So there is that grain that made it all kind of believable.
Mm-hmm.
And in this world where Trump gets on every single day and just lies and makes fun of individuals and sometimes low-level ones, this outrage when other people's LDS, some LDS people's Gore gets hurt. Look, we need to have the same sense of outrage when this kind of thing happens everywhere, not just when our own ox is gored.
Yeah, yeah, it was unfortunate. Hey, let's do one more thing before the break, and this one's hard to do quickly, but we had the Oakland Port legislation that was a $53 million to help get coal from rural Utah to Oakland. Passed in 2015. Oakland banned it because for environmental reasons. We sued? Was it the state of Utah that sued or rural county commissioners?
We participated. We gave $1.5 million toward this private entity's lawsuit.
Federal judge just struck down the ban. Carbon County is all excited because they can export this coal.
Which is so awesome because, you know, the reason they struck it down was Commerce Clause violations. We all saw that coming from a mile away. But unfortunately, you know, the liberals like to use the Commerce Clause as this massive extension where the federal government can come and control things at the state level. And so it's just funny that in this situation, Jim, the Commerce Clause came back and beat up on California.
I have one question for the legislative analysts. They're researching. Part of that deal, the head of the CIB that gave out the money, the Community Impact Board was also the head of infrastructure for the Bank of Montreal. And he brought the CIB board to Oakland on two occasions and sold them on the project. He quit the month before the vote and then was collecting $1.4 million of that $53 million of taxpayers' money as a commission. And the state is researching, is he still going to get his $1.4 million? As soon as that became public, he was transferred by his company immediately to New Jersey. Jeffrey Holt, are you getting your $1.5 million of taxpayers' money or not? And should people on those boards be collecting big commissions where they draw state business to their own companies? Apparently it's legal.
Yeah.
Hey, in our next segment, we'll talk about the Inland Port and the proposed special session. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider a donation to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Dan McKay on the right.
Jim DeBacchus on the left.
Natalie Gochner in the political center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. Guys, I want to talk about the Inland Port, but before we do that, let's take a second and just talk about the opposition group to the medical marijuana ballot initiative that have filed a lawsuit against Lieutenant Governor Spencer Cox. I feel for this Lieutenant Governor.
Constantly.
He's got all these ballot initiatives and all this work. And he, for those of you that don't know, he's like the Secretary of State and over all of elections. He has the election office within his portfolio, yeah. And it's a mess. Not they're doing a great job, but there's just so much coming to them.
Well, and it's an interesting time to be Lieutenant Governor, where so many election-related issues, initiatives, sell my vote or whatever, or keep my voice or whatever the different things are. You got all these different deals, and no, Natalie didn't even react to that one. but you have all these election-related issues, and luckily, our Lieutenant Governor is not a shrinking violet on these issues. He's standing up and taking positions.
And has legal training, which is a great background for Lieutenant Governor. Anything there, Jim?
Nope. I salute him. It's a tough job, and he seems to call him the way he sees him.
All right. So let's talk about, in a broad terms, the relationship between the Utah legislature and the Utah governor and the capital city, Salt Lake City.
This is a strained relationship. Yeah, as you say, you think strained is the right word? I would say
What are the adjectives?
Yeah, it's almost like this terrible playground environment where, everybody's got sand in their eyes and everybody wants to cry about it.
Wow. Well, so this is really bothersome to me because it harkens back to what I think of that happened in the 90s with the Legacy Parkway and the early 2000s, where a Salt Lake City mayor sued the state. I should say, the Sierra Club sued the state, but it was all with the face person of this was the mayor, Rocky Anderson. And
did the state learn nothing from the Legacy Highway?
Yeah,
they're
falling
into
the
same trap.
Jim, I have notes on my phone from the Legacy Parkway days because I served as Governor Leavitt's spokesperson at the time, and I just have had, they were on my BlackBerry then, and they're now on my iPhone. But I looked at my notes, and there was a lesson learned there, and I wrote it down, and it said, we did not anticipate the risks. So in other words, we went into a fixed-price contract, and then the lawsuit shut it down, but we had already committed to all of the lease and all the equipment, and we had to just pay these daily things as the lawsuit went on and on and on. Anyway, my message to both the state and to the city would be, nobody wins in a lawsuit. The state might prevail.
Don't sue Salt Lake City. It's a bad idea.
Salt Lake City.
Why do you want to sue Salt Lake City? Oh, you want to encourage them to sue. Jim, yeah. It doesn't. The case law does not support.
Let's tell people what happened.
Okay. I'd like to hear your version.
There's a 20-year development plan for the Northwest Quadrant. The city just finished it up. They spent blood, sweat, and tears, and this land belongs to Salt Lake City. There's no question about it.
The land use powers belong to Salt Lake City. It's privately owned land.
But it's within
just
the jurisdiction. It's within the jurisdiction of Salt Lake City.
Yeah, I just want to make sure we don't think that it's public land out there. There are private landowners.
Yeah. So the state decided at the last minute on the fourth version of a bill, the last night of the legislature, that they coveted this land. There's some good plans that most people are in favor of turning this, I hate the term inland port because it doesn't really say what it is, but it's a transportation hub kind of. And so the state decided at the last minute that they didn't like what the city was saying, and the speaker went to a draconian measure, which in effect fired the city council, fired the mayor, replaced them with a legislative appointed board that has total control, takes away 100% of the tax money from 19% of the city's entire land mass and almost a third of all the developable land and the rest. They just decided, we covet this, we're going to take it, we're firing your city council and mayor, we're putting our own developers board on there, And they did it. And now they're complaining because the city might take them to court. Hello.
Dan, do you want to represent the state's point of view on this?
Or what happened? So it makes it sound like this conflict over the inland port started like, you know, 15 minutes before the legislative sessions last night, right? So 4-5 years ago, Salt Lake City's grand vision for this entire property that's being discussed now, it's despite its private ownership, its entire plan consisted of a bird conservatory. You know, where the roads of the Intermountain West exist, is I-15, I-80, I-215. You have all these federally invested highways, and they cross the country. Utah is right in the center of it, and Salt Lake City's grand vision is bird habitat.
Dan,
and I got nothing wrong with habitat.
I'm just dying here because, Dan.
I know. The Envision Utah guys had different plans.
Well, I don't even think that. This is what I think. I think we just distort this, and this is what the problem is. There's actually a lot of—
so badly, I got to bring it back to the middle by telling a very bad version of my side.
There's actually a lot of common ground here, and the common ground is that we got to do the right thing in this quadrant and that it's going to be a public-private thing and that it's going to take both the city and the state to make it happen.
But
and
that
we need an increment to make it happen. That the state's got to invest mega, you know, dollars for the prison and for all sorts of things. But Jim, I take issue with you calling it just, you know, a transportation hub. Because if it were that, we don't need it.
Yeah, we don't need it.
It's really about connecting Salt Lake City and the state of Utah to the global supply chain.
Wasn't
in
I
an
telling this
era
story?
When we're moving from retail to fulfillment. And so it's warehousing, it's distribution, it's manufacturing, it's exports.
We got rail,
rural
we got
Utah.
Freeways, we got a
there's a significant
state
interest there.
The only thing is, I hate it sounds ridiculous, an inland port, you know, like we're going to have cruise ships coming.
But it reminds me of when the 2002 Olympic Winter Games were talked about. That wasn't a Salt Lake City endeavor. You know, it was called the Salt Lake City Olympic Winter Games. But it was the state that underwrote it. It was the state that paid for and got the sales tax to build the thing.
With the advice and consent
of
the
city, you have to do it together.
It was not a rape.
Yeah.
This was not consensual. They went in and just swallowed up and grabbed a large, huge portion of the city and said, you know what? We don't care what you want. We're taking it.
I just like the irony that Jim is now saying that local control of land is really, really important and that some parent organization shouldn't take away local control of land. Because if we could go and plunk bear's ears in the middle of this property, I wonder how Jim would feel, if he'd feel any differently.
You know, and I just think that...
Nothing, Jim?
It's really quite complex. In the details, but the thing that's not complex is we have to stay at the table and we have to keep talking, we have to keep working on this. So for example, on the increment, the city maybe gets really upset about the state wanting to take the whole increment. So this is a technical term, but this is the increased property taxes that would come from developing it, and you put it back into the project. It's going to take the entire increment and more to put in the infrastructure you need in this area. And so I don't see that as the state taking something. I see that as the reality of what you have to do.
It's $500 million to Utah school kids, if I'll say that.
And the
bird habitat is?
You know,
what do I do from the political middle?
I'll tell you one thing. If I would have sat down with Greg.
You side with us, because we're going to make sure that thing gets done.
If I sat down with Hughes, it would have been a different outcome, and we would have got this done. This is not about ego. This isn't about, it's coming up with a fair deal for the city because it needs to be developed. So, we need the state help, but also you got to have people that are not arguing stupid personalities and things. You need to say, I would have started by saying, Your Royal Highness, dear Greg, please don't do this to Salt Lake. Please, please. And he would have laughed and said, what do you want? And I would have said, you know what? The day you come up with a draconian solution, we're going to court and we're going to be there for 100 years like Legacy Highway. So I have some traction. I have some leverage. The city's been so dumb, they didn't bring that into the negotiations and they still aren't talking about
that.
You
want to make it worse on how it got dumber? They sold away they basically, in the midst of trying to keep the legislature from doing something, in your words, draconian, they then took all of the development rights and the possibility for the inland port, and they gave it to the developer. So all the land use control that they were hoping to keep and be able to incentivize the inland port, they tried to do everything they could to thwart it. And if you go look at that development agreement that they've assigned with the developer who owns the property out there, you go look at that development agreement and look at what the city hurriedly gave away so that the city wouldn't give it away for them, or so the state wouldn't. It's ridiculous, Jim. All of the behavior, and I'm with Natalie on this. I think if you look at all of the behavior in the deal, there were a lot of egos moving around the deal, and a better way to have done it would have been for the city and the state to come together. Unfortunately, the city was so opposed to anything the state would do, and the state was so opposed to anything the city would do. It was tough for them to come together.
And my, you know, opinion from the middle is that we need them still to come together. It's hard. It's complex. Get together. It's going to take both the city and the state to do this.
The city can't do it until it gets some leverage, though, is my point. Right. Yeah. Because they got nothing. Hey. One more thing on the airport. Okay. I'm talking to some cool senators who said, damn right, we want the airport. But right now,
I have to give the listeners context. You're saying that the state wants to take over the airport.
Yeah.
Okay.
And as a part of this,
Delta will not allow that.
But that's their issue now. It's that the airlines don't want it, but they'll be working on that. They'll be thinking up incentives and cash and stuff. That's what they want too.
I'm exhausted, Dan and Jim.
Salt Lake City and the state relationship is exhausting. And honestly, this is why I think it is probably time for the city to be looking at new leadership.
And the state too.
And I'm here to say that the airport is so well managed and has done such a great job for the city, and there's nothing wrong with Salt Lake City leadership, with the exception of they need to stay talking. They need to stay at the table with the state, because the state has a lot of power here.
That was my understanding, is that's where the communication broke down, is that the two could not find a place.
Keep talking.
Maybe it's that acknowledgement of the last piece that you said, which is the state has a lot of power.
Let's do something more trivial, because you guys have worn me out.
Natalie was on the airport board for many years, knows everything about the airport.
Know a lot about it. Half of Utah's 50 largest cities have at least one employee who makes more than $200,000 a year, and that's more than Governor Herbert.
Yep.
That's more trivial.
There is justice in the world, Anna. I mean, you ought to be paid by
How does this happen? Because the complexity of the state, serious, in terms of the enterprise that the governor is in charge of, is so much more significant than a city.
Have you ever known anybody? Yes. Have you ever known anybody that didn't run for governor based on an extra $100,000 a year?
Thank you. That's where I was going, is exactly what Jim said, is I've never seen salary limit somebody's decision to run for governor.
So maybe we should be talking about how high the city employee salaries are.
There's no question. I saw, in fact, I remember Representative Dougal, now the auditor, he wanted to run a bill that made it so that city salaries were capped at whatever the governor was making.
Can I bring up a little irritating thing here? I mean,
two
lobbyists that, as far as I'm concerned, screwed up this whole port thing, each make way over $100,000, just in over $100,000. How many lobbyists are there in the state that are paid for by taxpayers' local money to go up and lobby the legislators that are there by the people? This whole...
Each city is paying a lobbyist these days, and you have each school district paying some kind of government relations person. All of the government entities in the state are all...
And
they all have lobbyists.
Little. I mean, they can make $100,000,
$200,000. So we are into
dollars.
Our gripe session. Do you guys want to just make this your gripe?
Sorry.
Dan, do you have another gripe?
No, my gripe is Salt Lake City parking tickets. I just, honestly...
This is a hard program.
It's so ridiculous. You know, the little app that you go in, you know, park Salt Lake City, and you do a little deal. Well, you had to update your credit card information. And if you forgot when you push pay to hit, they have one more yes to say, do you really, really want to park here? I missed that last yes.
And then you got a ticket.
Because I said yes, 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 and I missed the do you really, really. And every time somebody asked me if I really, really want to do something, I guess I forgot. So I got a $25 parking ticket.
Yeah, that's a pain.
I missed the good old days when they were 25 cents.
Jim, I don't know if we have time for a long gripe. You can do a short gripe.
Okay, real quick, the Utah Pride Center opened in their fabulous new amazing $1.5 million paid-for center on Main Street. Kid came up to me, said, can I take a selfie? I said, yes. He said, I'm the Gay Straight Alliance leader in Orem High. And I said, wow, that's courage. How, do they treat you okay? He said, I'm not just the Gay Straight Alliance leader. I'm the student body president.
Wow. And he's got a picture with Jim. Hey, I don't have time for a gripe, typical, but the Peregrine Falcons are back. After a three-year hiatus, I think they're at the One Utah Center. There's 1,600 breeding pairs still left in the world, and we've got eggs on One Utah Center.
Where did they go?
I have no idea, but it's exciting.
Hawaii.
Better stuff. There are good things happening in Salt Lake City. Hey, you've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I have been joined by Dan McKay and Jim DeBacchus. Emily Means produces the program. Thank you for listening.